This podcast is brought to you by the Legarten Institute. I'm Sianne Hansen, Executive Director, and we hope you enjoy this conversation.
Hello and welcome to the Legarten Institute. I'm Mary Schutzer-Weissman, Programme Coordinator for the Culture of Prosperity Programme. And here with me is David Abulafia, Professor of Mediterranean History, who will be giving our first lecture in this year's History of Capitalism lecture series, which focuses on Lübeck and the Hanseatic League. Because this year, our series is interested in the importance of cities and place on the development of capitalism. Welcome, David. Which city in history has been most central to human flourishing, in your opinion?
Well, I think the answer is probably London, because London has not merely a very long history going back to the Roman period, and probably even before that, but also because it's been the centre of an empire which obviously came into existence from the 16th century, 17th century onwards, which has been worldwide. And therefore, it's had an enormous impact on other cities, so cities in India and even China, Hong Kong, places like that. Cities in South America, which, although not colonies, obviously modelled themselves on London. Cities in America. So it's been a sort of model city in many ways, but it's also been an enormous economic powerhouse because it's both an inland city and a port. And although it doesn't function as much as a port as perhaps it used to, nonetheless, it's had that role in a very significant way. And of course, Britain being an island, it's a trading nation which depends on the sea. And on top of that, its cultural influence, enormously, the spreading of the English language. That's perhaps something that goes beyond London specifically, but London's played a big role in that. And then, of course, there's also the other dimension, which is London in relation to Europe, as one of the great cities for a long time, the largest city in Europe. Perhaps it still is, and depends how you measure these places, of course. So it's been a pole of attraction, not just in Northern Europe, but it's also played a very big role in the economic life, obviously the financial life of Europe and the world. So I think it's difficult to think of another example quite as good as that.
Which city has had the greatest impact on you personally?
Well, probably the answer I should give is Rome, because when I was preparing my PhD, I actually spent the better part of 2 years in Rome. Doing a PhD takes normally about three and a half years, and I had a scholarship which took me to a very remarkable institution which goes by the name of the British School at Rome, which is actually a research institute. It's not a school at all, and it's funded by the British Academy in England. And that was a place where I could not merely get on with my research, but I could travel all over Italy. I could become familiar with Italy, which I needed to do for my research. And really, Italy became very much part of me, as it were, during that period. And since then, I mean, I go to Italy several times a year, usually, sometimes for a conference, occasionally for a holiday, but I'm constantly going back and forth. So I think it's really had enormous impact. But it's also a city because of its multiple identity, because it's got ancient remains, because at the same time you've got the presence of the Vatican, which is obviously a worldwide institution. It's a place of enormous fascination, layer upon layer upon layer of history.
They seem very good at living with their history in Rome, don't they?
Yeah, indeed, yes.
And looking to the future, which city is one to watch for you?
Well, I think probably Singapore, which I know a little bit. It's got this extraordinary success story. It's since, I mean, at the end of the Second World War, it's still quite an impoverished city, and it's transformed itself into a great financial and trading centre. But it's not just that. It's, I mean, at the expense of democracy, you might say, because it's quite an authoritarian sort of state. But they have managed to create a very stable entity in the Far East at a time when, obviously, some of their neighbours have been undergoing quite difficult phases. You think of Malaysia, which it was for a time part, Indonesia and so on. It seems to be a very stable element in quite an unstable world. And as we know, that is an area to watch generally because of the economic potential of that vast area. I mean, we know also that China is entering into difficulties, but Singapore, with this extraordinary community of largely Chinese and also Indian and Malay population, and also some European population as well, it's a sort of melting pot where all these people come together and have created something quite distinctive. Still very much dominated by consumerism, I think it needs to pay a little bit more attention to cultural life. They're beginning to do that. They're getting interested in their history, which actually goes right back to the 14th century.
And today your lecture will be on Lübeck and the Hanseatic League. Why is this relevant to us today? Why does it matter?
Well, I think the reason it matters is that it tells us something about the nature of economic relationships, particularly about the way trade is conducted. Trade being conducted in quite a harmonious way, with lots of cities joining together under the leadership of Lübeck in this so-called Hanseatic League, which included at its peak perhaps 200 cities in northern Germany and the Baltic. And so this was a trading confederation which somehow managed to function without rules and regulations, without a sort of central parliament, really. I mean, there was something, but it hardly ever met. So it gives you some idea about how human beings can create a workable commercial network without needing a very elaborate structure. And perhaps the leaders of the European Union could learn something from this.
Do you think that, is it, in my small knowledge, it is what we might call a protectionist league? Is that really the case? Or is that sort of applying?
They certainly took a hostile view to those cities which were not members, which could be a problem, for instance, for English merchants who wanted to trade in the North Sea and the Baltic, and some Dutch merchants. But on the other hand, it was so inclusive, and you didn't really have to sort of join. You just sort of associated yourself where there were lots of little sort of circles of cities that had occasional meetings, and then there was a sort of super meeting every now and again as well. So it was a very loosely organized sort of protectionism. I mean, there's an element of that, but I think it was more a question of trying to open up opportunities for German merchants in a world which previously had been dominated by the Vikings and other rather more aggressive types of trader.
That's fascinating. Thank you very much, and we very much look forward to your lecture this evening.
To hear more podcasts from the Legatum Institute, please visit our iTunes channel or website at www.li.com.